milkshake.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
This is Remember That Film, the show which covers a look back on memories, nostalgia, and behind-the-scenes facts that you may not have known about your favourite films.
Sometimes it can be hard to say exactly why something works. Take Jaws, for example. Why am I and others still watching this movie from 1975? It stars none other than a mechanical shark. Back in 1975, the term blockbuster was completely unheard of. Movies were just stuck in the summertime to play and not knowing how successful they would be. This all changed in the summer of 1975, with director Steven Spielberg, only known at this stage with two movies on his resume, which was the made-for-TV called Jewel and Sugarland Express. Jewel, the movie about a truck chasing someone in a car, the entire movie. This one had the same premise, only this time it was an eating machine on the hunt for prey in the water looking for food. This was the movie that started Steven Spielberg's run to become one of the greatest directors of all time. But this wasn't without its challenges. With 4 months of filming, the cast getting seasick at numerous occasions, and a mechanical shark that just wouldn't work, hours were spent daily wasted on getting things to work. Peter Benchley's best-selling novel about a killer shark and tourist beach town has become a film that is full of suspense, tension, and terror. According to David Brown, one of the film's producers, almost everyone remembers when they first saw Jaws. They say, "I remember the theatre I was in. I remember what I did when I was home. I wouldn't even draw the bath water. I was no exception. I first saw the movie at the ABC Turnpike Lane in North London at the age of 12. It was a Sunday afternoon and I'd had to catch 2 separate buses to get to the cinema. I sat on the right-hand side of the packed auditorium and I remember very clearly finding the opening sequence so alarming that I wasn't sure I'd be able to get through the rest of the film." As I told director Steven Spielberg several decades later, watching poor Susan Bacalini being dragged violently back and forth by the unseen underwater shark, I generally feared that I would lose control of my bodily functions. Jaws opened across North America on 464 screens, and an unprecedented publicity blitz. $2.5 million was spent on promotions, a substantial chunk of which went on TV advertising, still was a novelty at the time. Promotional tie-ins, including Jaws-themed ice creams, were everywhere. Lifeguards were falling asleep at their station, remembered the film's other producer, Richard Zanuck, because nobody was going in the water. They were on the beach reading their book. In the first 38 days of its release, Jaws sold 25 million tickets. Its rentals in 1975 were a record-breaking $102.5 million. When adjusted for inflation, the film's total worldwide box office is now estimated at a close $2 billion. In the wake of Jaws' extraordinary success, filmmakers and studios started to see the summer months not as dog days but as prime time, something that had previously only been true for the declining drive-in market. The summer blockbuster was born on the 20th of June 1975 with Jaws.
Roy Scheider, Robert Shaw, Richard Dreyfuss, Jaws. See it before you go swimming.
Hello and welcome to Remember That Film. And the second week, or the second episode, is Jaws this week. And Adam doing it solo today, talking about the memories of Jaws and some of the score music are there. And we'll also go behind the scenes and, of course, check out all what was happening in the box office of June of 1975 and what other movies came out. But that's not just Jaws today, and I'm not just doing the whole show solo because I'll have Robbie with me later on today to talk about all the Oscar nominations which have come out this week, and we'll go through those and our predictions of who we think might come up their winners come February the 9th. Now, for my talk about Jaws, so the first time I saw Jaws, unfortunately, you know, 1975, I wasn't born, so I never got to see it at the movies. But Dad, once again, got this for me. I probably may have been about 10 years old. and put that into play. And I heard of Jaws before because I think there was some runs on the TV of the awful sequels, Jaws 2, Jaws 3, which was 3D. At the time, 3D was a bit of a gimmick in the 80s. And then there was the one of the worst movies of all time, Jaws 4, The Revenge. But the first one, I'd heard that it had been a classic and all this. And Dad said, well, let's see how you go with this. And at the time, you know, Jaws, it was an M-rated film. It wasn't PG or anything. It only had a few bits of blood into it. But the whole premise is it was very, very scary. And when I first watched it, I didn't sleep for an entire week. I think I pictured just about every scene that had happened with legs dangling in the water, and shark attacks. And what made that film so scary is, and it's just something they do not do today in horror movies or suspense movies, is you didn't see the shark until about halfway through the film, because Spielberg did the same in Jurassic Park, and he sort of did it with Duel, the movie made for TV before Jaws came out. He just knew how to build suspense and, of course, character. He had characters in it, three big ones, which, by the way, credited all three, Richard Dreyfuss, Rob Schneider, and Robert Shaw. All three come up in the credits all at once. At the time, that was the first movie to ever do that, and not many have done that since. So if we were talking Oscars right now, how would you nominate Best Actor when all three of them were technically all an actor, or Best Supporting Roles, all three of them? What would you put them in today? So that's a bit about my memories of Jaws. Lots of score music to go through. Well, rather the two notes of score music, which feature through most of the movie, but we have a bit of adventurous bit of music that comes in through that as well. But now let's check now to our box office.
What day is it? The date? What year?
What movies were released on the week and year that it was at the box office?
And it was June the 20th, 1975, and the only movie that came out that weekend, well, you guessed it was Jaws. And back in those days, of course, other movies were not released all on the same weekend together, competing with each other. It wasn't until this movie, Jaws, which created the blockbuster and then all the competition. And now we can see, you know, three movies by Disney all in one weekend. But some other movies that came out around that time in June of 1975, Rollerball, that came out the week after Jaws. And just the week before Jaws leaving up, we had Love and Death, Night Moves, pretty good movie that one, and this one won the Oscar in 1975, Nashville. That is a well-known one. That came out the week before Jaws came out in the box office. So we go down to the top 10 highest grossing films of 1975. The Apple Dumpling Gang, Tommy at number 9, The Other Side of the Mountain, Funny Lady, 3 Days of the Condor, The Return of the Pink Panther, the sequel, that'd be the sequel to The Pink Panther. Dog Day Afternoon, a classic film with Al Pacino. Shampoo, and One Flew Out the Cuckoo's Nest coming in at number 2, and that was one of the Oscar winners, and Jack Nicholson that year. And of course, Jaws coming in at number 1. Wasn't expected to gross $260 million at the time, but it sure did. It actually, when you go by tickets sold, it sold 126,000 tickets. Number 2 on that list, One Flew Out the Cuckoo's Nest, was at 53,000. So we're talking more than double the amount of tickets that were sold for Jaws when you're trying to factor in things like inflation in the year now 2020. We're going to go to some score music from the great John Williams, who described two notes. Well, Steven Spielberg thought the two notes that he played first that he was joking, but then he realized that he was actually serious, and he thought, yeah, that works. And then we came up with Jaws. We will get to the main Jaws theme a bit later, because it's the one well-known one, but let's go to some other score music from it. And this one is called The Sea Attack Number 1.
Thank you.
from John Williams from the Jaws score soundtrack, Sea Attack Number 1. And of course, at the start of that track, that's when the famous ad-libbed line came in, "We're going to need a bigger boat." We'll have a bit more about that in the behind the scenes that'll be coming up very shortly. Let's go to another track from the score music now, a shorter one, something a bit different to the Jaws theme in it. This one's called Tourists on the Menu. So this is played during the scene where they're on the beach and it's the 4th of July and nobody's quite going in the water until the mayor goes over to one first lot of people and say, "Why are you not in the water?" So they get in and then we have the big build-up in suspense to a scene that happens later on in that part of the film. Here's that score music now. You're on 2MCE, Remember That Film with Adam, and now we'll go to a track from the movie. Well, it wasn't from the actual movie itself. Of course, the three lead actors all sing Show Me the Way to Go Home after the chilling Indianapolis story scene by Robert Shaw. We'll have more on that in behind the scenes. But after that, they read into Show Me the Way to Go Home. And then we have a big suspenseful thing where the shark comes up at nighttime. But here's a Kathy Kirby version of Show Me the Way to Go Home.
Show me.
Let's now get behind the scenes.
So some behind the scenes about Jaws, and there is a 2-hour documentary on the Blu-ray that gives you a lot of insight of what it is. We could speak for hours about behind the scenes that happened in Jaws, but here's a select few that I've come up with. Robert Shaw and Richard Dreyfuss could not stand each other, and the two argued all the time, which resulted in some good tension between Hooper and Quint. In fact, at one stage, Quint was very, very seasick, and he had one big line to yell, and I didn't think he'd be able to do it. And Steven Spielberg yelled, "Action!" And Quint yelled out, "Hooper, stop doing that!" Really, really loud. And then he went, "Cut!" And then Richard Dreyfuss just fell to the floor, throwing up. And that take was used in the film. According to director Steven Spielberg, the prop arm looked too fake in the scene where Chrissy remains are discovered. So instead, they buried a female crew member in the sand, and that way her arm was exposed. According to writer Carl Gottambid, the line, "You're going to need a bigger boat," was not scripted, but was ad-libbed by Roy Scheider. When composer John Williams originally played the score for the director Steven Spielberg, Spielberg laughed and said, "That's funny, John. Really? But what did you really have in mind for the theme of Jaws?" Spielberg later stated that without Williams' score, the movie would only have been half as successful, and according to Williams, it jump-started his career. According to the Making of Jaws in 95 documentary, the shooting star that appears during the night scene where Brody loads his revolver was real, not an optical effect. According to director Spielberg in the DVD Making of documentary, his original idea for introducing Quint was to have him in the local movie theatre watching Moby Dick, starring Gregory Peck. Quint was to be sitting at the back of the theatre laughing so loudly at the absurd special effects of the whale that he drove the other viewers to exit the theatre. Eventually, Quint would be discovered sitting by himself. Spielberg says that the only thing that stopped him from doing that scene was Gregory Peck, who held part of the rights to the movie. When Spielberg was approached by him for permission to use the footage, Peck turned him down, not because he thought it was a bad idea to use the film that way, but because Peck did not like his performance in Moby Dick and did not want the film seen again. Originally, Steven Spielberg was not the director of Jaws. The first director, Dick Richards, was fired after a meeting with producers and studio executives. In the meeting, he said, and his opening shot would have the camera come out of the water to show the town, then the whale. It would come out of the water. The producers said that they were not making Moby Dick and that they would not work with someone who did not know the difference between a whale and a shark. When the shark was built, it was never tested in the water. When it was put in the water at Martha's Vineyard, it sank straight down to the bottom. It took a team of divers to retrieve it. Roy Scheider stated that in interviews that the scene where Lee smacks him in the face, she was actually hitting him. Apparently, the actress could not fake a slap, and so the 17 takes was some of the most painful of Scheider's acting career. Also, Lee stated that in several interviews that in one of the takes, when she slapped Roy, his glasses fell off. Director Steven Spielberg shot roughly 25% of the film from water level to provide the viewers the perspective as if they were treading water. Robert Shaw ad-libbed the "Here lies the body of Mary Lee" line after director Steven Spielberg prompted him to give Brody's wife a hard time. Asked later where he quoted it from, as it would require getting a license and release from the author to be used in the film, Shaw said that is unlikely, as it was off an old grave marked in Ireland. Richard Dreyfuss initially passed on the part of Hooper, saying that Jaws was a film he would love to watch, but not make. Robert Shaw also ran into trouble with the IRS and had to flee the country once his scenes were completed. If he spent more than a certain amount of time in the US, he would face a tax liability. To circumvent that, Shaw was flown to Canada on his days off. When the sharks attack Hooper's cage, there's live footage of a real great white with a rope hanging from its mouth. This shark's mouth is clearly much smaller than the shark's mouth when it attacks the boat moments later. These scenes were filmed by noted shark photographers Ron Taylor and Valerie Taylor, with the help of shark expert Rodney Fox, specifically for the movie. because the great white shark they filmed would be smaller than the mechanical shark in the movie. They constructed a smaller version of Hooper's shark's cage. Inside the cage, they ultimately used a small little person. One of the sharks got caught in the cage. His cables and tore it apart trying to escape. The footage was so good that they changed the script to reflect the destroyed cage and Hooper escaping by hiding on the ocean floor. However, the small person used in the scene refused to go back in the miniature cage, which was damaged in the incident. And just on that, yes, the tailors there who filmed that, photographers, were from Australia. And yeah, those were real shark footage underwater filmed in Adelaide. Spielberg states that his original idea for introducing the shark was going to be a scene that took place at the dock at the night. The harbour master would be watching TV, and through the window behind him, the audience would see a row of boats rising and falling as the sharks swam underneath them. Spielberg believed that the swell of the boats would help indicate the huge size of the shark. However, the logistics involved with it, additionally, it constantly malfunctioned and were not allowed to see the scene to be filmed. Much to Spielberg's disappointment, the scene had to be shelved. Preview audience didn't scream when the head of the shark victim appeared in the hole in the bottom of the boat. The first big response was for the sharks appearing when Brody is chumming. Director Steven Spielberg says that he got greedy and wanted a scream from the earlier sequence. He reshot the scene in the editor's swimming pool numerous ways to finesse the moment. He then found that the chumming scene got less of a scream, which he eventually realized was because the audience didn't trust him and it was wary about what might come next. When Roy Scheider was trapped in the sinking orca, it took 75 takes to get the shot right. Scheider did not trust the special effects team to rescue him in the case of an emergency, so he hid axes and hatches around the cabin just in case. I can just imagine that. And what's the great thing about that is he's the scared one who's scared of water and drowning and all that. Then you had the expert shark guy and the guy who fears no sharks. And then, yeah, you saw he ended up being the hero at the end. In the original script, Quint was killed off by drowning. The rope from the harpoon that he fires at the shark wraps around his foot and is pulled under the knot of the shark, calling for Brody to give him the knife. This is also the way the character was killed off in the book. And according to an interview with Spielberg about the scene, it is similar to the way Ahab dies in Moby Dick. However, it was decided that Quint should be eaten, and this would be most tragic for the character based on his experience on the USS Indianapolis. So the script was changed to what is in the movie. Benchley was not happy with Steven Spielberg's ending where the shark is killed when a compressed air tank explodes it in the mouth, claiming it was unrealistic. Spielberg defended himself by saying he will have held the audience's attention for 2 hours and they will believe anything in the end, no matter how unrealistic or unbelievable the ending really was. Though respected as an actor, Robert Shaw's trouble with alcohol was a frequent source of tension during filming. In later interviews, Roy Scheider described his co-star as a perfect gentleman. Wherever it was sober, all he needed was one drink. And then he turned into a competitive son of a bitch. According to Carl Gottlieb's book, The Jaws Log, Shaw was having a drink between takes, at which one point he announced, "I wish I could quit drinking." Much to the surprise and horror of the crew, Richard Dreyfuss simply grabbed Shaw's glass and tossed it into the ocean. When it came time to shoot the infamous USS Indianapolis scene, Shaw attempted to do the monologue while intoxicated, as it called for the men to be drinking late at night. Nothing in the take could be used. A remorseful Shaw called Steven Spielberg late that night and asked if he could have another try. The next day of shooting, Shaw's electrifying performance was done in one take. And that's been Behind the Scenes. Now we're going to go with the main title Jaws theme to end out our Jaws featured Remember That Film for the week right here on 2MCE. And then coming up after that, I've got the news, the Oscar nomination news with Robbie. And now up to this week's news, and big news this week, and I'm joined with Robbie for another week. You were up in the Golden Globes last week. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Adam.
Good afternoon. Before we get to the Oscar nominations, though, we must do some housekeeping. Last week, the Golden Globes, we didn't make mention about the Lifetime Achievement for Tom Hanks.
Well, yes, it was this. So Tom Hanks got the C.B. DeMille Award for his contribution to acting. He's done a lot of films that were biopics, including Sully and the new one that he's currently in.
The Walt Disney one as well. Saving Mr. Banks, was it?
Saving Mr. Banks. A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. He plays Mr. Rogers. And then there was that Captain one.
Captain Phillips.
He played, that was also.
And he made a good joke about Love Boat, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, early on.
Other one, the Carol Burnett Award, went to Ellen DeGeneres for her contributions to television. So she's the second person to receive this award.
Yeah.
But yes, that is our housekeeping on our Golden Globes.
Yeah, and now we're on to the Oscar nominations came out this week, Tuesday morning for us. Early Tuesday morning it was.
Yes, it was.
I woke up and thought, oh, yeah, that's right. So we'll start off with the smaller effect sort of awards first, and then we'll move on to the real big ones.
Definitely.
Like they will do on the Oscars on February 9th or 10th for us.
Yes, 10th for us.
Yeah, the week after 9th. Super Bowl. Yeah.
I think it's the 9th.
Yeah. Oh, it'll be the 10th for us, though, yeah. On the Monday.
Yeah.
So best original score. So we've got Joker. I'm not even going to pronounce the composer of that, try to pronounce it, because I've got no idea how to pronounce that. We've got Little Women from Alexandra Desplat.
Yeah, I think that's how you say it.
Yep. Marriage Story, Randy Newman. He's a well-known composer. 1917, Thomas Newman. And Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, John Williams. I have to say the most disappointing one was no Alan Silvestri in there for Avengers Endgame, because that's a really good score.
It was,
I would
definitely.
Have probably trying to find a way to fit him in there, but I'm going to lock in Joker for this one. Fantastic score in that film.
I just want to go off on the original score for one thing, that John Williams has become the most nominated person to be nominated for Oscars in the history of Oscars other than Walt Disney.
Yeah, 52, I think, was it?
52 nominations or something like that, which is amazing.
Amazing achievement. And John Williams, you know, some people create that ambience in score music, but he knows one how to create a melody, one where you remember it and it's in your head all the time.
My prediction also is Joker for Hilda.
Yeah. So best original song we're going to now. Now, Toy Story 4, I Can't Let You Throw Yourself Away. Then we have Rocket Man, which we mentioned last week. It won the Golden Globe. I'm Gonna Love Me Again. And I'm Still Standing With You from Breakthrough. Frozen 2, Into the Unknown. I did watch that a couple of weeks ago. And Harriet with Stand Up.
Yes, my prediction will be 2 for 2, I think, or maybe 3 for 3 by then. I'm going to go with Rocket Man, I'm Going to Love You Again, Elton John and Bernie Taupin.
I think I'm going to go with that as well. So, yeah, well, I think we're in agreement so far. And, yeah, Elton John and Bathurst, by the way, next Wednesday.
Yes.
So
can't wait for it.
Yeah, so, his farewell tour. It's great that he's coming here. Makeup and hair now, we've got it for Bombshell, Joker, Judy, Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, that's the sequel.
Maleficent.
I can never pronounce that one. And 1917. Well, I think it's a toss-up here between Joker and Judy. With Joker, you know, you're putting makeup on all the time anyway. But you know what? I'm going to go with Judy here. I'm going to go with something different.
I haven't seen Joker. I've seen the trailer. I'm going to also go with Judy because I've seen the whole film and the makeup and hair, and that is incredible.
It is. Well, the things I did with Renee Zellweger to really change her, and she looked unrecognisable in
exactly.
that.
Exactly. It didn't look like how she looks like normal everyday life.
Yeah. Now, the costume design, we've got the Irishman in there with Christopher Peterson. Jojo Rabbit, Maisie Ribeiro, I think that's pronounced, and Joker, Mark Bridges, Little Women, Joaquin, Jacqueline. Duram, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Arena Phillips.
With the Irishman, did you say Sandy Powell?
Oh, yeah, as well. Yeah, as well as Christopher Peterson, yeah.
So prediction for costume design?
Little Women.
Little Women, okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah, a movie that me and you both really didn't like. I didn't like it at all. I do like the kid that was in it. A lot of people do love that movie, though.
Yes.
Yeah. Just wasn't for me. Now, the visual effects, we've got Avengers Endgame, The Irishman, 1917, The Lion King, and The Rise of Skywalker. Okay. I'm going to go Irishman because what they did there with all the CGI and the de-aging was quite incredible to get the special effects of a, 70-odd-year-old De Niro trying to look in his 40s or 50s again.
And they did that all with a computer,
yeah.
Which is incredible.
Yeah.
I'm going to lock in the Avengers Endgame because I think it's their only nomination.
I think so, yeah.
Yes, they only have one nomination and that's it.
Now we're up to Best Animated Feature and How to Train Your Dragon. How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, the sequel. I Lost My Body. That's supposed to be actually really good. Then we got Klaus, Missing Link, and Toy Story 4. Of course, the big one they're missing is Frozen 2.
Yes, I'm very shocked that it's not there.
You'd think to go to Toy Story 4, but Missing Link having won the Golden Globe puts me in two minds there, but I hear good things about I Lost My Body. I'm going to go Lost My Body.
Okay. I have not heard of I Lost My Body or is it Klaus?
Yeah. Or Klaus, yeah.
Klaus. I will go with Missing Link again. I think you'll get it.
All right. Adapted screenplay. So we've got The Irishman with Stephen Zellian. Jojo Rabbit, how do you say that name?
I don't know I can't pronounce it myself. It's
Taikini.
Taikiki Waikiki, I think.
Taikini Waikiki, or something like that.
It's very hard to pronounce.
Yeah.
He's a New Zealand director.
Todd Phillips for The Joker. Then we got Greta Gerwig for Little Women and The Two Popes with Anthony McCarten.
Joker was Todd Phillips and Scott Silver, sorry.
Yep.
Adapted screenplay, I'm going to go this time with, I think, Little Women for Greta, because I think she didn't get a nomination at the Golden Globes, and I know it's the seventh time it's been done, or eighth time it's been done, but she would be a favourite, I think.
I think you could be onto something there. This one is a tough one. I might go with her as well. Yeah, The Little Women.
Because she was also the director of Lady Bird last year.
Yep.
She's very good director.
Original screenplay. So we've got Rian Johnson for Knives Out. I really enjoyed that one. Marriage Story, Noah Baumbach. 1917, Sam Mendes and Christy Wilson Cairns. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino, Parasite, Bong Joon-ho. Yep. And Jin Won-han as well. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino, who's already won two Oscars for screenplay before for Django Unchained and Pulp Fiction. I think this will be his third.
Third. I'm going to go with, going to throw a name out there and say Marriage Story for sure. I think
okay.
Marriage Story. Lock that in.
Cinematography, I've got this one locked in. Rodrigo Prieto for The Irishman. Then we've got Lawrence Shear for Joker. Joanne Blasch for The Lighthouse. 1917, Roger Deakins. And Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Robert Richardson. 1917, lock that one in.
1917, you've locked in?
Yeah.
I will go with you because I haven't seen the film, but I think it's a sleeper, meaning that I think it's going to pick up a lot of awards on the night, so I'm going to go with that too.
Yeah, the cinematography looks great in that. Now, Best International Feature Film, Corpus Christi. Then we've got Honeyland, Les Miserables, They made another one of that. Pain and Glory and Parasite. Parasite, lock it in, put all your money on it. No way it's losing.
Lock Parasite in. The director got Best Director at the Critics' Choice Awards, and he got the Golden Globe for Best International Film. I think over all awards, he'll get Best International Film.
Unfortunately for Parasite, if it wins that, it may not then win Best Picture, because this is what happened to Roma last year. But we'll see what happens there when we get to that. Film editing, we've got for here Ford vs. Ferrari. It's Michael McCluster and Andrew Buckland. The Irishman, Thelma Schumacher, Jojo Rabbit, Tom Eagles, Joker, Jeff Groff, and Parasite, Jimmo Yang.
I'd like to hear your answer first.
My answer first. The editing, you know what? I'm going to probably go Ford vs. Ferrari here, the editing on that. I think this will be the one they can win.
I agree with you. I'm going Ford vs. Ferrari for that too.
A lot of editing and some of the car racing there, and some of the scenes were just really well done. Now the sound editing, Ford vs. Ferrari again, Don Sylvester, The Joker, and Alan Robert Murray. For 1917, Oliver Temme, Richard Tate. And Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Wiley Stateman. And for Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker, Matthew Wood and David Accord. I will go 1917 here.
I'm going to go with Ford vs. Ferrari.
Yeah, I thought about that. Now, sound mixing, Ad Astra, first time we've mentioned that today. Ford vs. Ferrari, Joker, 1917 and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I will go 1917 again.
1917, I'll lock that in too.
Now we've got production design, The Irishman, Bob Shaw and Regina Graves. Jojo Rabbit, Ra Vincent and Nora Sopkova. 1917 and Dennis Gasnier and Lee Sandals. Geez, I'm having fun this afternoon. Yeah. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Barbara Ling and Nancy Hai. Parasite, Lee Ha Jun and Chu Won Hu. Han Gu Ram and Cho He. Holy dooly. I got through it.
That's a mouthful.
As for who's going to win production design, Parasite.
Parasite. I haven't seen it. I'm going to go with The Irishman.
Yeah, The Irishman, 3.5-hour movie. Now we're going to get to the big ones, which are easy to pronounce. Everybody.
The biggest awards of the night, the most important.
I'm not the greatest in pronunciation, but we'll go from director first and work our way out for the actors until we get the best picture last. So director, Martin Scorsese for The Irishman, Todd Phillips for Joker, Sam Mendes for 1917, Quentin Tarantino, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Bong Joon-ho for Parasite. I think it's going to be between Sam Mendes, Quentin Tarantino and Bong Joon-ho. And I think whoever wins this is going to depend on who wins Best Movie, because I think they're going to split it. I don't think enough of the female voters will pick Tarantino, because they're mainly focused for men, those sort of kind of movies, and there is no female director. Greta Gerwig, a lot of controversy that she didn't get directed.
She should have been nominated, I think.
She could be nominated, but who would you take out? That's my question, and nobody has an answer then.
That's exactly right.
And that's the problem. Maybe they need a best female director category,
like
they do with the actors, and then that would solve a lot of this problem. This is a really, really tough one here. I don't think it's going to go to Scorsese, because he's won for The Departed back in 2006. I think it's between Sam Mendes and Bong Joon-ho, and I think it's going to go to Parasite. I think Bong Joon-ho is going to win this award, but I'll get to my best picture later. If it goes that way, then it's going to be reversed.
Okay, I'll give you two, but I'll lock in one. Mm-hmm. Two, Todd Phillips for Joker, could be a curveball, or because he got at the Golden Globes, Sam Mendes, 1917.
Yeah, Sam Mendes is definitely a big chance there, and a lot of the British voters will be on that Academy too to vote. For those that don't know, it goes by, like we have our election here in Australia, preferential, which is what happens is if too many people split by preferential vote, that's why a dark horse could get up out of nowhere for Best Picture. And
that's
that is how.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how Moonlight won a few years ago ahead of La La Land, because people were picking Moonlight as number two, number two, number two, number two.
Yeah.
So that's what was happening. Now we get to our big acting acting awards. So supporting actress, Kathy Bates. That was actually a bit of a shock to most people for Richard Jewell, because she got in instead of J-Lo. Laura Dern for Marriage Story, Scarlett Johansson for Jojo Rabbit, Florence Pugh for Little Women, and Margot Robbie for Bombshell. And I think Laura Dern is going to get this one. She plays the lawyer really, really, that character really, really well and mean in Marriage Story.
I'm going to lock in Laura Dern too, but I would like to see Margot Robbie win for Bombshell, because that is the only Australian one, other than I think one of the cinematographer awards, that an Australian is nominated.
Yeah, and I watched Bombshell recently too, and she is really, really good in that, and particularly one particular scene. And those that have seen it probably know what I'm talking about. Best Supporting Actor, so we've got Tom Hanks for A Beautiful Day in the Neighbourhood, Anthony Hopkins for The Two Popes, Al Pacino and Joe Pesci both for The Irishman, and Brad Pitt for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I want Brad Pitt to win, and I'm locking in Brad Pitt to win. I really want him to win it, because I love his character in that movie. He's so likable.
I haven't seen it, but I'm going to agree with you, because he got the Golden Globe.
Okay.
So Brad Pitt.
Now we go to Best Lead Actress. Cynthia
Erivo.
Yep, Cynthia Erivo for Harriet. Scarlett Johansson for Marriage Story. Saoirse Ronan for Little Women. Charlize Theron for Bombshell, and Renee Zellweger for Judy. And I think we're both in agreement there that Renee Zellweger is going to win for Judy. It's a shame for Scarlett Johansson, because I think she would win any other year if it wasn't for that Judy role.
Hmm. If Renee Zellweger does not win for Judy, I think I would be very disappointed, because she put so much into that performance with the singing and her acting in that.
Yeah.
So Renee Zellweger, Judy for sure.
Now, lead actor Antonio Banderas for Pain and Glory, Leonardo DiCaprio, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Adam Driver for Marriage Story, Joaquin Phoenix for The Joker, and Jonathan Pryce for The Two Popes. At first, you know, well, there's a few people who have missed out here. Firstly, though, Adam Sandler missed out, Robert De Niro missed out, Tina Edgerton missed out, Christian Bale also missed out on supporting actor. So those big four really had to miss out on those ones. I do think it's going to go to Joaquin Phoenix now. He seems to be on a roll now of winning all the big awards, you know, the Golden Globes and going on, and I think it's his to lose. And I think the Joker's really putting their campaign towards Joaquin.
I'm going to go with Joaquin Phoenix, but if it was any other year, I would have, if Phoenix wasn't in the category, I would have gone with Adam Driver for Marriage Story.
Yeah, yeah, and I think Adam Driver's going to have heaps of opportunities in the future as well. He just showed his versatility in that movie. The argument scene is just wow. One of the best bit of acting this year.
Yeah.
But Joaquin Phoenix, fantastic job. And you know, he's played villains before in Gladiator.
Yes.
And you know, we've seen him in Walk the Line, and he's just a great actor.
But I don't think he's ever won an Oscar or Academy Award.
No, I think this would be his first. Yeah, it would be his first, yeah. Now we get to the big one, the Best Picture, and there were 9 nominations this year, first time since 2008.
2013,
when The Dark Knight Rises.
Oh, you mean the, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. So they're going back to having 9 again, and I think Ford vs. Ferrari, the first one on the list, would have been that ninth one. They just snuck in there, because a lot of people are saying The Farewell completely got snubbed, The Farewell, for everything, didn't get anything. At all nominations. The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Joker, Little Women, Marriage Story, 1917, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Parasite. To tell you the truth, I've got absolutely no idea, but as I said before, it's going to depend on who wins that director. Now, if Bong Joon-ho wins for Parasite, I believe Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is going to win Best Picture. If Quentin Tarantino wins that director award, I think Best Picture may go to Parasite. One thing that's going against Parasite is it will probably win the it's not called foreign anymore, the international film,
that's
now called. But 1917 is just sitting there, and we'll see what happens there. But Golden Globe winner last year, what would we have? We had Bohemian Rhapsody and Roma.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah, and then out come Green Book out of nowhere. So there's something that could still come out of nowhere because of that preferential voting. So I think it's between Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, 1917, and Parasite, but a lot of it is going to depend on who wins that director award, because I think whoever wins that director award, you can forget about those three. Hmm.
So did you lock in one answer?
Did I lock in one answer? Well,
I think you need to.
Well, it depends who wins the director award, doesn't it? Well, look, because I've gone with the director, you know, for Parasite, I'm going to go with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Okay. So I've got a couple here, so... I would love to see Ford versus Ferrari win Best Picture. Whether it wins, I don't know, but it's from start to go to the end of the film, it is probably one of the best films I've seen last year. I think the winner could be, again, as you said, 1917, or another curveball. This would be a huge... cue for Todd Phillips' Joker.
Yeah, look, the thing about Joker is, you know, superhero, although it's not really a superhero movie, it's more of a villain movie.
It's a comic, but a comic book character.
A comic book movie has never won an Oscar, either as a horror.
Yeah.
You know, because The Lighthouse, William Dafoe is another one who I'm hearing, you know, a lot of people weren't happy that he got shafted because The Lighthouse is a horror film.
Also in lead actress, Awkwafina for The Farewell, she got snubbed as well.
Yeah, she did, or J-Lo, you know, we can't forget her for Hustler, which I thought was her best career role too, so it's very unfortunate for her. Look, I don't think Ford versus Ferrari has any chance, because I said I think that was the ninth movie that just scraped in there. That they picked that.
But you enjoyed the film.
I did. I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. But I just know what the Academy, you know, sort of tend before. And 1917 is Oscar bait, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I do think it's between those three films. And, you know, Netflix, you know, they've got Irishman and Marriage Story going up against each other, and I think that goes against them as well.
Yeah, I think the one we can definitely know won't win will be, I'm pretty sure, would be Little Women.
Yeah.
I think we can guarantee that. Guarantee that, and maybe Ford versus Ferrari.
That wouldn't be funny if Little Women won after all the controversy with the best director, not any females, being nominated. But a female director has won before, The Hurt Locker, back in 2010.
James Cameron's ex-wife.
Yeah.
What's her name?
One of many ex-wives.
Yes. What's her name?
She is. And I saw The Hurt Locker when I was coming back from Japan, and the only time I've ever been overseas, I watched that on the plane.
It was a really good film. It was Jeremy Renner.
Oh, Catherine Bigelow.
Yeah,
Catherine Bigelow. That was
it. So, yes.
Yeah, Jennifer Kent, by the way, a great female director in Australia, Australian too. She has some great, The Nightingale and The Bobble Duke recently. She's going to be a great director. Look out for that name, an Australian too.
And Rachel Griffiths for Ride Like a Girl. She did a great job. That was her director.
Yeah, she directed it. Yeah. That was a good movie. Yeah, Rachel Griffiths, of course, you know, Muriel's Wedding and 6 Feet Under. She's, you know, big over in America right now.
And was it not Parenthood? She was in a TV series over there that was pretty popular, Brothers and Sisters.
Sisters, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good one too. Well, I think we've gone through all this, so the next time we're going to have you on will probably be that first week of February, well, the second week of February, after the Oscars, which will be somewhere around about the 14th or 15th, yeah, just before. It'll be Valentine's Day, actually. Yeah. It might be.
It would be the 14th if the Oscars fell on
I'm going to have to find some love movie, romance movie for that day now, for Valentine's Day, to have it on there.
Yeah.
And your show's coming up.
Yes, it's
also after the 3 o'clock news, entertainment.
That's right.
Yeah.
It starts on the 29th. It's called Entertainment with Robbie and Luke. No, it doesn't start on the 29th. Let me redo that again. It's Entertainment with Robbie and Luke. It starts on January the 31st, 3 till 5, every Friday.
It's only a couple of weeks away, so everyone should tune in right after they finish listening to this show. Now remember that film. Next week I'm going to have Jack on, Jacqueline, of course, with M, who do their show Wednesday afternoon. She's going to talk about The Fifth Element, so that should be a good one as well.
Well, thank you for having me on, Adam.
Yeah, thanks for coming in, and we'll see you again in just under a month.
Sounds good.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.